Discourse podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen. I'm joined by Chief Political Correspondent Andrew Riley, and we're discussing the March 2020 Democratic debate. I've lost track of what number it is.
Don't even try.
It's the Biden versus Bernie, mano a mano, 277-plus-year-old white males.
Standing 6 feet apart from each other.
Because of coronavirus. And excluding Tulsi Gabbard and Deval Patrick.
Yeah. Still technically running as far as I know.
Yeah, as far as we can tell. So what were your main takeaways from tonight's debate?
So one of the questions we had coming in was whether or not Bernie was going to go after Biden and attack him and how. And so by and large, he didn't attack him as much as he could have. But he had a couple of points where he did attack Biden. Got Biden to commit to a couple of things and thought he might be trapping him in some lies. Specifically, one of those things that came up was Bernie asked Biden about his statements on the Senate floor when he was a senator before he became vice president, she'll nominee and then actually vice president, and then also his work on the Senate floor as the vice president, dealing with the Republican caucuses that were trying to really shut down government spending, sequester, et cetera, with something like the Bolton-Simpson Act. And Biden was saying things that were not positive of it, but being supportive of it, being willing to take hard measures, being willing to be a politician and compromise on things when Bernie Sanders was willing to take unpopular positions or harder line things and stay consistent to his ideals. So this was really a debate of ideals versus pragmatism. And Bernie thought he had winners. He thought he could really hit Biden on Social Security, on some of these other subjects, and say, Biden is not looking out for the common man. I am, and I always have been.
Yeah, right before the debate, I kind of turned to you and said, do you think that Bernie's going to come after Biden hard? Because in so many ways, this is kind of his last chance. He's, 78 years old. This is almost certainly his last run at the presidency. Probably his best shot at the presidency.
And he'll run again in 2024 if he's the incumbent. But yeah, if he doesn't win the election this time, then he's not going to run, I don't think.
And this is probably his last chance. I mean, he's still got a very outside chance of winning the nomination, but if he loses these next couple states pretty badly, it's all but over. And so this is in many ways the last chance of his revolution. Maybe some of the shifting of the Overton window that he's been able to implement will live on, but this is kind of his last best chance. And it seemed from previous debates that Biden was certainly susceptible to maybe not rattling as much as just looking bad on the debate stage. And I thought that Bernie was a little more aggressive than usual, certainly more assertive than usual. Seemed like early on he spoke over his allotted time and intended to kind of interrupt and interject and talk over Biden more. And Biden seemed to be willing to allow that to happen. But having said that, I was actually relatively impressed by how Biden did. And this is probably just because I have such a low bar of expectation. But he was relatively coherent throughout the entire debate. And he got what I thought were some pretty fair counter punches in when Bernie attacked. He seemed to be on his game. There was no go to Joe 3030. There were relatively few references to like phonographs and other things like that, even though there was some old man moments from both candidates.
But well, they are both old men. I think the one that probably confused you the most was when he talked about wanting to have additional financial stimuluses to put into the economy to deal with the coronavirus. And the fact that we've had so many financial stimuluses since 2008 and ongoing since 2008 that we don't really have room for a financial stimulus. And he referred to that as, we've eaten the seed corn, and you were confused by this terminology.
I've never heard that phrase in my entire life. And of course, you being the old man were like, of course, everyone says that.
No, not everyone.
I said it to my wife this morning. I'm eating my seed corn for breakfast.
I feel real bad about it because I wish we had it for later.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, and later on they were, they were talking about the coronavirus earlier on, and that led to a discussion from Biden about how the Obama administration handled Ebola. And then Sanders had a comment where he's like, oh, I got Ebola on the brain and everything. And then I think Biden started referencing SARS. And,
yes, it came out of nowhere.
There were jokes on Twitter like, next thing you know, they're going to be referring to like the bubonic plague and stuff like that. But, you know, Bernie's always, I thought, there's a lot of criticisms you can make of Bernie Sanders about how everything always ties back to the millionaires and the billionaires and the pharmaceutical industries and whatnot. But I think he's a pretty decent debater, and he knows when to kind of make his points and interject humor, and he's fairly charismatic for a curmudgeonly old guy. Maybe that's just because I have a soft spot in my heart for like the
curmudgeonly old guys.
Well,
is that why we're friends?
Because you're a curmudgeonly old guy,
apparently.
Maybe. But you know, like the people who are like pure in their convictions and like, I'm thinking Ron Paul, clearly. The curmudgeonly old guy who
were Dr. you, no. Like me, a fan of Dennis Kucinich and his UFO stories?
I don't know about the UFO stories, but Dennis Kucinich seemed like one of the least bad politicians.
Even though, of course, he's very much
had nothing to do with UFO stories, though.
Right, but he was on the other side of the spectrum from us politically.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Like, I have a certain amount of respect for anybody who seems to be able to stick to their, any politician, I should say, that will stick to their convictions, because it's so uncommon. You know, even 99% of politicians just go wherever the wind blows them.
Even if the best thing for most people, for politicians to do, is to compromise, you're still okay with them saying, no, I'm never going to compromise because I'm sticking true to my convictions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, so obviously it depends on certain situations. Well, no, I don't know if it does, actually. Probably doesn't. Because if I say it depends on certain situations, then it just sounds...
So, floppy. On the compromise thing, let me take something out of context here. We noted that Joe Biden commented... there was a lot of talk about the Hyde Amendment tonight. And the Hyde Amendment, just to clarify, again, we've been criticized for going deep into the weeds and not giving explanations. The Hyde Amendment is an amendment that Congress puts onto almost every single federal spending bill, saying that no federal funds will go towards the procurement of abortion services for an individual. That if it is a medically a program that funds medical operations, it will not fund abortions. Even if it funds any other kind of medical operations, abortions are off the table. And Joe Biden made a statement saying that he has this very positive rate. The two candidates were going back and forth, and Biden has said that everyone in the Congress and Senate has voted for that at some point. And Bernie didn't immediately interject saying that he never had. And you noted that that indicated that perhaps he had voted for it at some point, and that he wasn't jumping on it immediately as a talking point for Joe being completely incorrect.
Because that was a common theme throughout the debate, is that Biden would say like, oh, well, you know, we had to do this to get certain stuff done. And Bernie would be like, I never voted for that. Like, I voted against the Iraq war. I voted against this. I voted against that.
Bernie was very much on the, I made the hard choices and took the unpopular votes when I needed to. But he didn't do it on this one, even though he's really claiming the mantle of even being more pro-choice than Joe Biden is, which is an impressive stance to take.
Well, Joe Biden's Catholic, correct? Yes.
And as I've said, nominally.
Well, I think...
He and his wife attend services on a regular basis.
He's had a long career. He has been less pro-choice in the past.
True.
Question mark.
Yes.
Okay.
But he's definitely carrying the Democratic position's water on abortion these days, and as is Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is going further, perhaps, in saying, you know, it's just as much as it ever has been and more. So, but he did not immediately interject and say, no, no, I never had to make those kinds of calls because, as of course, I fact-checked this during the debate, he has voted for this because the Hyde Amendment, the reason why it's successful is that it is an amendment. It's never just the thing by itself. Bernie Sanders never voted for anything that would restrict a woman's right to choose, but he was very much stuck in a position where if you want to fund the federal government, you will vote for this. And so, like pretty much everyone in Congress, he has voted for it.
Yeah, I think if you talk to my wife, she would claim, probably with good reason, that I can be a stubborn individual. And I like to believe that if I were a politician, I would probably vote against almost everything, because I'd be that jerk who'd be like, I don't like this one line in this law that is completely irrelevant. Let's just say the Hyde Amendment. I don't like the Hyde Amendment. So even though I like 99% of everything else that's going on there, I want you to take that out. And if you're not going to take it out, I'm going to vote no. And probably everyone would hate me, because generally people kind of hate those kind of people who don't go along just to help the government run efficiently. But I have a certain amount of respect for those one votes out of 535, whatever it is. I have a lot more respect for those people who vote. Who is that representative who voted against the Iraq War? Not even the authorization of military force. There's one vote, and I don't remember what it was, but even Bernie Sanders and I think Ron Paul voted all for some sort of vote, but there's one person who voted against it. And I'm drawing a blank there, but basically, I have a lot of respect for those people, because it takes a certain amount of sticking to your principles to go against 534 other people.
Especially
does that answer your question? Did you even ask a question?
I'm not sure I asked a question there. But the desire to be liked, especially by people who go and run for these elections, the people who are representatives are very rarely people like us. Mm. You and I don't run for office. You and I are unlikely to run for office, although we've each independently entertained the ideas because we're arrogant.
I'm also a realist.
We're also pragmatic. We have no chance of winning.
I would not even get like 1% of the vote. So
yeah, because we can't do the things that are necessary to do. We can't fundraise. We can't self-fund. We go out and we campaign and we're exhausted after 2 hours and we can't do it anymore.
It's hard for introverts to go out and press the flesh.
It really is.
Especially in these days.
Don't be pressing the fresh right now. Even Joe and Bernie didn't shake hands.
They did an awkward forum bump. Yeah,
yeah. That's going to be the new style, the new greeting. I thought we were all supposed to be doing the Vulcan thing. You know, like live long and prosper.
I have not heard that.
I thought that's probably the best answer.
Okay, I'll do that.
Live long and prosper.
I'll definitely get weird looks from people, but
not from me. But I apparently don't matter.
Yeah, you really don't.
No. Debate. We're talking about the debate.
One thing, you've mentioned this already, but I was surprised. I expected this to be a progressive versus centrist kind of back and forth. And really, it was more of a, to your point, principle versus pragmatic, which may sound like the same, but I think it's a subtle difference. Instead of going on about like Medicare for all is way too radical and abolishing private health insurance is way too radical, is more of a I voted against all these things that you voted for kind of. That was Bernie's like plan of attack, essentially. Mm-hmm. Is that I have always been for gay marriage. I have always been against the Iraq War. I've always been whatever the thing was. He could claim the moral high ground for the most part. Biden, I think, to his credit, had a pretty good counterpunch with his talk about the Brady Bill and Bernie Sanders's, for the Democratic Party, problematic stance on gun control. But I think that was the defining theme of the night for me, is the whole, like, which one of us is... Do you want the pure candidate that has principles or the pragmatist who can get stuff done?
So I think it was Bernie who was setting that as the tone.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The question is that successful for him? One of the questions has to be, Bernie is the underdog here. He's behind in the polls. He's behind in the delegates. He's not doing so well. He needs to get some wins. The plan of attack is, I've been consistent on these positions my entire career. Joe Biden is inconsistent and a pragmatist. Is that actually going to win him votes in the Democratic primary? Now, this is the Democratic primary. I think being a pragmatist is beneficial for the general election, but this is a calculus about the Democratic primary.
I don't think so.
I agree.
Because poll after poll has indicated that all the Democrats care about is getting Trump out of office. And in a vacuum, what's the best way of getting Trump out of office? The guy who can get stuff done. It's not the Puritan who will possibly alienate centrists or other people. And Yeah, I don't know if it was the best avenue of attack. Even if he did score some points possibly on those, I'm not sure it's going to win him enough votes to sway a Democratic primary.
So a couple of points on this. I agree with that assessment overall, but Bernie Sanders was laying traps for Biden as well. And these traps will affect him now in the primary election, and they also will affect him in the general election. Because Joe Biden is a politician with a very long career. He has had presidential runs before that he has failed at. He failed in 2008, eventually losing to Barack Obama and then becoming his vice presidential nominee. But he lost earlier as well in the 1980s when he ran. He had to drop out of that election because of a scandal about plagiarizing some of his speeches. Now, that's not particularly well known, but it is something that is coming up now again because he is running for president. He also has a long history of being a politician who lies, because that's what politicians do. Bernie Sanders laid a trap for Joe Biden about some of those lies, saying, you know, he's always been in favor of keeping Social Security strong, for example. The Social Security attack seemed to be one of his strongest points. If he could get Joe Biden on stage to confirm his position that he's never been in favor of cutting Social Security, when the evidence points to the fact that Joe Biden was willing to cut Social Security, that seems to be a point in Bernie Sanders' favor. What do you think? One, do you think that that attack was successful? And two, do you think that it makes any meaningful change that Joe Biden, again, playing this pragmatist, was, as we've seen, willing to put anything on the table to get a deal done, including potential cuts to Social Security?
I'm going to channel my Joe Biden here. No.
Long wind-up question comes down to a yes or no question. Deserves a yes or no answer.
But unlike Joe Biden, I'll go into further depth. The short answer is no, because I still don't know if anybody really watches these debates and makes any voting changes based on it. But more than that, I don't know if... I understand the political calculus behind it, is that Bernie Sanders sees that he's popular with the youngs, and he needs to get more popular with the olds. And what motivates the olds? Social Security. So if you can find some way to say that, to tie Joe Biden with, he's going to take away your Social Security, that might be one of his best avenues of attack. And he clearly, during the debate, you could tell by his body language, he thought that he had scored a direct hit. I don't know. There's enough wiggle room in terms of like some of the wording used that, what was it? It was Joe Biden said, like, we don't need to cut, or we will or will not need to cut. There's enough wiggle room where I think you get the PolitiFact, Washington Post, whatever it was. Like, they could probably rate it as a slightly misleading rather than a pants on fire, or whatever the terminology is. I don't think this is going to be a huge turning point in the election. As much as Bernie needed it to be.
I think Joe did a very good job of dancing on stage, which is something that I'm surprised by.
I was shocked. Absolutely shocked. Anyone who's listened to the previous ones should know I'm shocked by how well he did.
Yeah, he saw the trap being laid, and he's like, oh, I know where this is going. I know exactly what he's talking about, and I need to be very careful with my answer here. And he gave a factual answer, to the best of my knowledge, that avoided the question more than it answered it. But the fact is that Bernie, I think, did have some success there. And Bernie may not be able to enjoy this success. I pointed out to you as we watched the debate that the person who might enjoy the success from this attack may well be Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump has been remarkably in favor of Social Security and government spending, especially for a Republican. Republicans are the party that want to cut federal spending for most of the time. And Donald Trump has been, screw it all, spend it all, get more money. We'll spend more money that we don't have. We're not going to raise taxes. We're going to cut taxes, but we're going to spend even more than ever, and we'll just grow the economy to fix it in the end. So he has been very much pro-Social Security, despite the fact that many of his parties, like Paul Ryan, were working on those plans that Joe Biden was willing to compromise on to cut Social Security benefits. And Donald Trump can really attack Joe Biden on this Social Security point if he wants to. So this may not pay any fruits for Bernie, but I could see it playing out fruits for Trump.
Historically speaking, I'm assuming older people tend to vote Republican. Is that a fair assessment? Or is that, does that not break down like you would expect?
I don't think it's going to break down as cleanly as you expect it to. I think there might be a slight tendency for older to vote Republican and younger to vote Democrat. But the thing is that people age and then they change. But people don't change as much. The parties change to a certain extent. The parties are different now than they were, say, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. To your point, Biden did a fair job of dancing around it, and the Democrats have a long history of being the party for keeping for being the supporters of Social Security. It's been more of a recent thing where the Republicans have been kind of the party for keeping Social Security as well. I think, you know, I don't know. Like, Trump has screwed up all the political calculus, you know, like all the things that traditionally Republicans have been for, half of them they're not for anymore, and some of the things they it's a whole new world, and it's really hard to say. I don't think this will be a fatal blow for Biden.
I see it as a fatal blow as well, but it's when you're talking about an election that's likely to be as close as this one is. Anything that's on the margin that makes Joe Biden less popular with people who might otherwise vote for him is potentially very dangerous.
I think that it's going to come down more towards less to the older voters who come out and vote anyway, and more towards who can motivate the middle-aged and younger non-college educated. The people that Trump kind of won over from the Democratic Party in the previous, the factory workers, the manufacturing sector, are those people going to be motivated to vote? And if so, are they going to vote for the Democratic Party or the Republican Party? I don't know. Honestly, this talk could be all for moot if the entire economy collapses over the next 6 months. And it's something we've been dancing around a little bit. I'll go ahead and throw that. We recorded a whole other podcast about coronavirus, so we're not going to touch on that too much here. But
there was a lot of debate talk about coronavirus.
Fully a third of the debate was about coronavirus.
It was definitely the introduction for a large chunk of the first question, two questions around coronavirus. It was their ending statements. It is the major theme of discourse right now.
And frankly, it deserves to be, because you can make an argument that Trump's number one, number two, and number three, like, calling cards for why he should be reelected is, look at the economy. The economy's doing great. The stock market's doing great. Your 401ks are doing great. Everything's great. Unemployment's down. Like, that was his main claim to fame. And it seems to be what he cares the most about is how the stock market's doing. And it's all falling apart now. And all this talk about which Democrat is best positioned and who appeals to what demographics, that could all be for moot.
Yeah.
This is March, so 8 months from now, if the economy and the stock market's still in the crapper, there's no way Trump's winning.
I wouldn't say there's no way. It definitely hurts his chances.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that has been definitely said is that Donald Trump is an incumbent, and incumbents, especially when they're hiding behind a strong economy, have a very high success rate at being reelected. If the economy is broken, Donald Trump's unpopularity and other factors suddenly become a factor. So is it something that can upset him? Yes, it can. Will it? I'm still not sure, but it makes it much more likely that Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or whomever the Democratic nominee is can win, because Donald Trump is weaker as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, you know, I have this theory that we all talk about all this political dancing behind the scenes and everything, and nobody watches the debates, nobody cares. It's all name recognition and whatnot. There's the what is it from the Clinton times? It's the economy, stupid.
Carville.
Like that, I think it could come down to something as simple as that. If we've recovered to a decent enough place by November, then Trump probably wins. If we haven't, and people can justifiably point to his probably failed leadership during this crisis, I think the Democrats win. And I think that holds no matter who the candidate is and no matter where the breakdown is in Latino voting or African American voting or old or young, whatever. I think it's just
I think that's incredibly accurate. And so you're an old man now.
I am.
And you went to a 1990s early election. I'm an older man, even though I'm younger than you. I'm going to go back a little bit further.
Sure.
It's the election of Carter versus Reagan. And Reagan asked the very important question of, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
As the fundamental economic question that will define whether or not he would win that election. And Carter's people were not able to make the case that people were better off than they were in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
For 2016 to 2020, 2016, things were getting better after the 2008 financial crisis, and they got progressively better. Short term, things are looking really bad for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the four-year history, if you're better off 4 years ago, if you're better off than you were in 2016, I think there's going to be more leeway for him. So is it something where people are saying only about the last 6 months to a year, or is it something where people who are voting are going to be able to have a longer time horizon and see beyond perhaps the crisis, but also look back further and look at the totality of the history?
I have no idea. It's weird because in many ways, I consider myself a pessimist in that I have a special skill to always think of the ways things can fail, things can go wrong, why things are terrible and awful. And yet at the same time, it's hard. Anytime I look back any significant number of years, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, the answer is almost always like, yeah, I'm better off now than I was back then. Like, how could I not be? My net worth has gone up. I've got kids, I've got a family, it seems inevitable to me that things get better. My phone is better. Like, things just...
So despite being a pessimist, you are a teleologist.
I have no idea what that word means, but sure. I believe I'm an optimist when it comes to, like, the progression of humanity.
That's a teleologist.
And, yeah, I kind of assume that, but yeah. Technology tends to advance. Humanity tends to advance. You take any, like, 5-10 year period, like, I'm pretty sure that you'd rather be in the latter half of that than the earlier half. And
doesn't that also then help to lead to the reasons why incumbents have a benefit?
Sure. That's one of any number of reasons why incumbents have a benefit. But to your point, well, I don't know if you had a point, but the economy was doing pretty well when Trump was elected.
Yep.
And I don't know if anyone would say the economy is doing well now.
Nope.
And
I think it's going to probably get worse, as we've discussed.
I think there's
we'll discuss.
Depending on which order you listen to these podcasts, I think there's a very good chance that, again, 8 months from now, that people, that there still could be a, the economy could be doing very poorly then. And that would reflect very, even if you're personally in a better situation than you were before, I think you could very easily make the point that the country is in a worse position.
One of the classic lines from any politician, if they are fighting for re-election in the middle of some sort of crisis, is the, you know, you don't change horses in midstream argument. I suspect we're going to see some variant of that from Trump, where we're in a crisis, I got it under control, I'm the guy who can fix this, and you don't want to change for me because I'm going to make this better. And it comes down to whether or not he's believable. The people who are not going to believe Trump, well, they're never going to believe Trump. So it's tough to say ultimately where this one goes. I do think that there's a lot of weight that's going to be placed on the economy. But even a bad economy, I don't think, is the death knell that a lot of people expect it to be. I was a couple of podcasts ago, our debates, saying that I had a, you know, very high mental percentage for Donald Trump being reelected. That percentage has gone way down. I now see it as much closer to a 50-50. And that is a substantial change from where I was because of these financial changes because of the economic changes, because of how he has handled the crisis and failed to handle the crisis, because of his own reactions within it. You know, my personal breaking point for whatever reasons was him retweeting the fiddler meme. It's like, why would that matter compared to any other action? And yet that was my straw, right? Everyone has a straw. That was mine.
That makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
For the record,
it makes
he has done
I recognize.
A thousand no, worse things than that.
I'm not saying it was a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah. He's done so many bad things. He's done some good things. Mm-hmm. The fact that that was the thing that upset me the most in terms of his inability to understand and comprehend what he's dealing with doesn't really matter. But it goes to show that he's going to have an uphill battle, and my confidence in his capacity to win this election has gone down.
So that's why it's really tough for me, because as somebody who is outside of the two-party system, I sometimes struggle to understand the appeal that certain candidates within the two-party system have. And for the longest time, I cannot grok the appeal that Trump has to so many people. Like, I understand that he has done some, and I stress some, I don't even want to say good things, because I know we're going to get hate mail about it, but like some, like, not terrible things. But by and large, he's an awful person who does awful things, and it leads to awful policies. And I think it's hard to look at how he's handled this coronavirus situation and come to any conclusion other than he royally screwed it up. And screwed it up to try and to save face over trying to save American lives. And that seems inexcusable in so many, many different ways. And yet, having said all that, I know that there is whatever percentage, 30, 40, 50% of the population that will defend all the actions and say it was all not his fault and it was all Obama's fault or whatever it is. I don't know. But it seems, and again, I hate to reference another podcast, but we just talked about this a little bit. Part of it is the problem that if we overreact to this, which it will end up being, if we overreact to this, it may end up being okay, and it may look foolish how we acted right now. And Trump can crow and be like, see, I told you it wasn't a big deal. We had this all under control. It's all fine. All those idiot CDC people, they don't know what they were talking about. That could reflect well on him. If we don't overreact or we underreact or whatever, and lots of people die, clearly that will be bad for him and his election chances. And it seems really crass to say that, like, oh, if a lot of people die, he's not going to get elected and whatnot. But
a lot of those people who die, maybe if you're saying that older people are his voters, a lot of older people dying means that he loses those voters.
God, it's even more crass to say it that way. But I mean, honestly, it could come down to that. Like, it could be as stupid as that, where, like, through no, not because of anything he did, but because of all the various state level governments private sector actors and everything else, encouraging people to take precautions. If we get through this and the economy rebounds in time, he could get reelected. And I don't know. I feel like I've gone way off topic from where this question started. But my ending point is that it just depends on random happenstance.
What determines this election? Events.
That feels like a reference that I should get, but I don't understand.
Well, maybe I'll put a link in the podcast notes if I can figure out how to do that. Anyway.
I do the podcast notes.
So I can't.
Dude, you can't. You can send it to me.
I have to write an article.
We know that's not going to happen. You're too busy playing Cardpocalypse, from what I understand.
So let's talk about some of the other moments here that we're talking about. Let me ask you this way. Many times in the previous debates, we talked about who won the debate and who lost the debate, and it was kind of old hat that the winner of the debate was Joe Biden.
Joe Biden was never the winner of the debate. Let's be clear.
He might have won tonight, but we'll come back to that in a second. But the winner of the debates was Donald Trump, because the Democrats spend all the night tearing each other apart, and he gets to stand off and say, look at these guys. They don't have any unity. They don't have any positions. They're just going off. The winners of many of these debates, maybe not all, but most of the debates, was actually Donald Trump. He was in a better position after the debate than he was at the start. Was Donald Trump the winner of this debate as well?
No. Only because he's got his... So what I was already talking about, he's got his own problems. I think...
And this debate was focused on those problems in a lot of ways. The coronavirus was such a large part of this debate, and that's really his biggest problem right now.
I think you could make an argument that the past 2 or 3 weeks, well, I think you could make a very strong argument that the past 2 or 3 weeks have been the worst weeks of President Trump's presidency. And this is including the weeks where he was impeached and there were hearings and FBI investigations and whatnot.
Yeah, he can blame the Democrats for those things.
Exactly. For those other things, he could always point to, oh, it's the media's out to get me, that Chuck Schumer's out to get me, the Democrats are out to get me.
Hey, the virus is out to get me. Well, this virus is out to get everybody.
Yeah, there's no excuse for this other than incompetency, really. Like, I guess the excuse is, oh, it's not nearly as bad as it seems.
No, it seems pretty bad to me.
When pretty much everybody else, like everybody else, saying no. It's bad, dude. You ignored the president. It's bad. And that seems like a step further than in the past.
I'm going to take, yet again, an uncomfortable position and defend the president a little bit.
Okay.
He has definitely said things that are wrong and misleading and damaging. But most of the things that he has said that people are most upset about are actually accurate. He's said, don't panic. He said something stupid along the lines of, you know, the stock market looks good to me because it was down, which doesn't make any sense until you look at it. He's, you know, maybe talking about buying. It looks good to buy because it's on the downswing. And you're saying that exact same thing yourself. He's not articulate. He's not good at saying these things. He's looking really bad as he says these things. But the don't panic is not too big a deal. It's not going to kill you is probably accurate. This is not a life-ending disease threat for the majority of people. Even in our worst-case scenarios, which we've been talking about elsewhere, it's bad, but you and I and those we know for the most part are going to be fine. But someone we know may die. And that person was probably old.
And it's worth pointing out, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden.
All old.
Almost certainly, one of them will be the next president. They're all, over 75 years old?
I think so, yeah.
Which, what's the mortality rate for coronavirus?
If they catch it, they have
it's like over 10%.
It's a very high percentage chance they're going to die, especially if they have underlying health conditions, concerns, such as hypertension, diabetes, etc. If they have something like that as well, especially if they have anything that impairs their respiratory systems, it's really concerning for their health. And yeah, we got to be paying very close attention to who each of the VP nominees is, I think.
Is bone spurs one of the...
No, bone spurs is not one of the problems. However, despite the fact that Donald Trump is apparently amazingly healthy for a man his age, he's also, obese.
Do you buy that at all?
Yeah, actually I do. He has good genes for whatever reason. Mm. He doesn't have chronic cholesterol problems. He doesn't seem to have the hypertension. He doesn't have heart disease. He easily could, based on everything we know about him and his diet and his exercise habits. He doesn't. So that means he's got good genes.
I'm less convinced of that. But I have no evidence other than like my eyes and seeing like he's a fat man.
He is a large man who should not be healthy at his age and seems to be.
Yeah.
But speaking of paying attention to their VPs, we presume that Mike Pence will continue to be Donald Trump's nominee for vice president.
Mm.
Joe Biden, on the stage tonight, made his position known on who his VP will be. He didn't name a candidate. He didn't name a person. But he did say that he would be nominating a woman to be his vice presidential nominee. And they tried to pin Bernie Sanders down the same way. He didn't, but he did say that it would be a very strong chance. And he did commit to having a majority of women on his cabinet if he was elected president. So this is a pretty substantial position for everyone to be taking. Obviously, not so much for Donald Trump, but there's a lot of pressure here to be more inclusive, especially with a bunch of old white men on the stage and in the primary positions on the tickets, to have some diversity on the ticket. So vice presidential nomination for Joe Biden will be a woman.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I turned to you and said at the time, like, wow, that's a big thing. And the more I thought about it, I realized probably not, actually.
It's not like a big thing. It's kind of expected almost.
Who was the male that he was like, maybe Buttigieg? Buttigieg, I think, would have been a strong pick. Before tonight, maybe I even would have made it my favorite. But it's considering the entire field, it's probably more likely it would be. I think we both agree. Amy Klobuchar, maybe.
Klobuchar seems to be the strongest candidate. One.
Maybe a Kamala Harris.
There, yep. And the senator from New York, I'm forgetting her name. She's also strong.
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yeah, Gillibrand. Thank you. I think Klobuchar is a stronger choice because she helps pull in the Midwest and she was really strong. One of the things I was finding very interesting about Klobuchar on the campaign trail was how much she was liked by Democratic voters. I've made no bones about my dislike of Amy Klobuchar on this podcast.
Repeatedly. You hated her.
I'm not fond of her as a person. I'm not fond of her politics. But in the Democratic side of things, she was well-liked. Everyone was like, yeah, I like Amy. I'm just not going to vote for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly who you want as vice president.
Do you think there's any chance he picks Elizabeth Warren?
I don't think it's not. I do not think it's impossible.
There didn't seem to be much animosity between the two of them, unlike Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Right. I think for that reason, Kamala Harris is maybe a harder pull. But Kamala Harris is also pulling double diversity. So that's some benefit as well. And but Biden maybe not needing that help.
That counts maybe in the Democratic primary. Does it count in the general election?
It can. One of the reasons why Obama won election in 2008 was because of white guilt to a certain extent. They wanted to show that they weren't racist and willing to vote for an African-American when he was also charming, charismatic, saying a lot of things they wanted to hear politicians say. Kamala Harris did an okay job with that. And if Joe Biden's at the top of the ticket, then that can say, yeah, I'm still not racist. You know, you were trying to say I'm a racist because I voted for Trump. Maybe it pulls some of the Trump voters back.
What did Joe Biden say? That Obama was clean and well-spoken?
Yeah, exactly.
Or something like that. One of his many gaffes.
Well-spoken and clean and articulate. Yeah.
So who do you think Bernie's vice presidential nominee would be? Elizabeth Warren?
That would seem to be, you know, top of the list, especially since he said there were progressive women. He had to have been thinking about her on that short list. I think it's probably moot.
Because he's not going to win anyway.
It seems unlikely he's going to win. Yeah. It's, you know, who won this debate? Bernie Lee.
Probably Biden, by virtue of him not losing.
Yeah, he was the front runner. A couple of traps got laid for him. He stepped in one of them, maybe a little bit, but he can probably escape from that. He needed to have some sort of major breakdown on stage, which didn't happen, or Bernie needed to go after him harder than he did. Bernie can still win, but it was already an uphill battle. I don't think this debate changes that calculus too much. So who Bernie has in his mind as his vice presidential nominee doesn't seem to matter.
As of today, March 16th, actually, because we're past midnight now.
Yay.
What would you put the percentage chance of Trump winning the 2020 election versus Biden winning versus Bernie winning versus somebody else winning?
So, Trump winning is 45-50%.
Okay. I think it's higher than I would put it.
It's the most probable outcome I have. It's because I think that in a head-to-head election between Trump and Bernie and Trump and Biden, Trump wins the majority of those breakdowns. Even after this situation, it's really close. It's much closer than it had been before, but I'm still leaning to the incumbency bias.
A couple of weeks ago, I probably would have agreed with you, but I think the most likely outcome of this whole coronavirus stock market, possibly recession, is that it tanks Trump's presidency. Because he has staked a lot on the, you're better off because I can help the economy, I can help the stock market, all that stuff. And I think that's going to, he put all his chips on that, and I think that's going to bite him.
It comes down to how well he can pivot, how much things change for the better or not before the election, and so many other factors that we just can't know. This is very, very fluid. But I think Trump still has the inside edge against either Democratic Party nominee. Biden, Bernie, I'm going to say Biden has another 40%. Bernie has 5%. And then the someone else is another 5% or maybe even less. I think that's really overstating the other person. You know, that would be the case where Donald Trump contracts coronavirus, dies, and now Mike Pence is running kind of situation.
Mm.
And, you know, we laugh at that, but there's already been a scare where Jair Bolsonaro was visiting the White House and was alleged to have had the coronavirus. His son, Jair's son, says he had the coronavirus. Bolsonaro denies having coronavirus, had this strong contact with Trump. There was this real chance that Trump had coronavirus. Now, the latest I've seen is that the reports are Trump has been tested for coronavirus and has tested negative.
Do you believe that?
I don't know what to believe. Okay, I don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
And even if he's negative right now, there's no reason to believe why he couldn't get it in the near future. And as we've said, he's an old man. And maybe he doesn't have those underlying health concerns. But, yeah. And then also, well, he's the president. He's going to have the best case scenario healthcare. But even if he has the best healthcare available, maybe he lives. But maybe he's incapacitated at the point where he can't run. And then what happens? So those scenarios, I think, very slim possibilities. I don't think those are likely. But that's why we have to consider them more than we used to.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like 2 weeks ago, maybe, when people were making jokes about, like, oh, coronavirus, and now we're going to have, you know, 370-plus-year-old candidates running for president. And I think that's gotten a lot more serious recently. It was like, oh, crap, coronavirus. We have 370-plus-year-old candidates running. Hopefully, well, I shouldn't say hopefully, but I suspect that a lot of the vice presidential nominees will probably be younger. So,
no, it's hard to be much older than these guys.
That's true.
Bernie picking Warren would be the only one. Really,
I was going to say Warren is the only one that's fully up there, I think, in terms of age. But
you know, we don't want to have presidential elections determined by lot. A virus of, you know, the last man standing gets in kind of thing. This is not Survivor.
Man or woman?
Well, man, because we got three men.
Hey, Tulsi Gabbard.
She's not winning.
Jill Stein?
I think Tulsi Gabbard has a stronger chance of winning than Jill Stein.
Ouch. Poor Jill Stein.
Poor Jill Stein.
Hashtag Russian asset.
Both of them?
I think both. I mean, honestly, frankly, like, I think everyone has been accused of being a Russian asset on Twitter.
I haven't.
You're really missing out on being on Twitter.
I have not been accused of being a Russian asset on Twitter.
You'd love it. Join Twitter.
They want my phone number. No.
Just.
All right. Two more things.
Such an old man. Fine. What?
So one of the things that, you know, went back and forth was consistency. We mentioned this earlier, and then Joe Biden not being maybe quite so consistent, being pragmatist, but also changing his tune. He's quote from Joe Biden tonight. I'm prepared to admit that he says it's a mistake. As Joe Biden is talking about this thing that he did in the past that Bernie is pointing out that he doesn't necessarily agree with anymore. He's evolved on this position. And Joe Biden's answer there was so incredibly political. You know, this is, I'm prepared to admit that he says it was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, and that's impressive for Joe Biden.
It really is. It's like, is that intentional? Is this all just a facade? Are you actually really good at this and you're just pretending?
No. I'm almost, as much as, there are two things I'm confident of. One is that Trump is an amazing idiot. And two is that Biden is an amazing idiot. I've seen no evidence to indicate to me that there is like just some sort of super savvy politician that is playing us all.
They both have the same kind of tendencies where they do things that don't seem to make any sense, and yet they're pointed in the right direction at the end of the day. They have charisma of a certain sort. Now, it's harder to see for Trump, but he has it.
You can't see my face, but I'm looking very dubiously
at him right now. He's not just looking dubious, he's wincing as I say these words.
Yeah. I disagree with pretty much everything that you're saying with all your words.
I don't think Trump is a smart man. And yet...
I agree with that.
He makes political decisions that look really smart in hindsight. Like, he had this foresight that no one else had. So is he just lucky? Yes. Or is he actually playing everybody? Probably not. But I can't discount this, because when you're lucky so consistently, it's like, okay, I'm the casino, and I see you winning hand after hand after hand at blackjack table.
Mm-hmm.
Are you lucky? Or are you counting cards? And at a certain point, I say, I don't care anymore. Get out of my casino.
Mm-hmm. So you want to kick Trump out of the casino?
I want to kick Trump out of the casino. Unfortunately, that doesn't work out anymore.
You don't own the casino.
I don't own the casino. He does.
Fair.
This is my casino. You guys got to go.
That's so... My house, you guys got to go. What is that?
That's a commercial this NBA and Sprite, I think.
Yeah. It's my house. Was it Larry Bird? I don't know.
I don't remember.
We're old.
We are old. No one remembers this commercial except us.
Yeah. This appeals to absolutely nobody but you and I. And maybe Travis.
All right. Last one. Joe Biden, on a couple of occasions, they're having policy debates, and we had this great moment where Joe Biden tells Bernie Sanders that he doesn't want to have a policy debate in the debate.
Yeah. Like, what was the... I don't want to have
a back and forth with you about this.
A back and forth about our politics with Bernie Sanders right now. It's like, this is a Democratic debate. This is exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
That's the whole point of this.
Yeah.
And he was more articulate on some things than he has been in the past, but he was still... it seems incapable of really articulating policy positions. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, for all their very left-wingedness, have positions that they can articulate well, positions they truly believe in. Joe Biden, as a politician, doesn't really have positions he believes in. He has what's been focus tested, and he's very good at articulating elements of that, but doesn't want to be caught saying something, especially on camera. So he says... at least a couple of times during this debate tonight, he's directed people back to his website. If you want to know my position on this, go to my website. And, you know, Bernie also directed people to a website, but he directed people to YouTube to fact check.
The website, YouTube.
Yeah. To fact check that Bernie Sanders was making the correct statement that Joe Biden had not always been in favor of these, you know, Social Security positions. Biden's saying, people, go to my website so you can look at what my publicist has to say about these positions, what's been focus tested, so I don't make any mistakes up here. That's what my position is. And that's smart, but it also felt really inauthentic. If you can't articulate your position, it looks bad to me. Which gets back to your point of no one's watching this and no one cares. He's able to avoid the mistakes.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. I don't think anyone cares. I don't think anyone's actually going to joe3030.com or whatever the hell his website is.
Text Joe to 3030.
I think you and I are the only ones in the entire world. This is hyperbole, obviously, but I think we're one of very few numbers of people who actually went to look up on the website, youtube.com, about Biden's Social Security cuts or whatever. And yeah, they weather through clever engineering or... sponsored ads or whatever, they happen to have like the second result where it's like, oh, Joe Biden lies about Social Security cuts or whatever it was.
This was clearly a premeditated line of attack for Bernie Sanders. This was something that set up and laid out, and Bernie laid out the traps. And on the stage, he certainly thought he had a win. And beforehand, they thought they had a win. Whether or not they have a win remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think some small percentage of voters were watching. A smaller percentage of that can be swayed by things, and a smaller percentage of that actually looked into any of this stuff. Is it going to change the trajectory of the campaign? No, I don't think so. I think
it changes it if, you know, who's watching this? We're watching this. One of the things we've talked about is how much Twitter is the narrative of the coastal elites and the media, especially the journalists, a lot of journalists on Twitter. So if Twitter starts buzzing back and forth and back and forth and back and forth about how, oh yeah, Joe Biden really was willing to cut Social Security, if they start talking about that, then that can become a media narrative that can emerge over the next day to 2 weeks. And that can really hurt Joe if that happens.
Yeah, but I mean, if Twitter was the kingmaker in the Democratic primary, then we'd be talking about like Elizabeth Warren going up against Beto O'Rourke right now, or no, something along those lines.
I understand it's not a popularity contest on Twitter. It's about the narrative on Twitter.
Mm. Yeah, I don't see any way that this isn't. And again, this is kind of a complete reversal for me because I've been so against Biden from the very beginning, but I don't see how Biden doesn't win this one right now. Probably means put all your money on Bernie Sanders for all those who are listening, because I am awful at this, but yeah. I don't see how this changes the trajectory of the race at all.
You think Biden's going to win. I think Biden's going to win. Let's put some numbers on it. I would say Biden is going to win 80-20. So I would say Biden wins 80% of the time. Bernie Sanders finds a way to get the nomination 20% of the time.
That sounds about right. I was going to say probably 80-85%. So yeah.
All right. Do you have anything else from this debate? Because I've covered my list of topics.
Who's going to win the election? I mean, I know you said that.
Yeah.
You said what do you Trump. Think? I think Biden.
You think Biden wins the nomination and goes on and wins the election?
Yeah.
I think that's the second most likely scenario. So we're not far off on that.
I think this will end up sinking Trump's presidency, but we'll see.
In the event of a Biden presidency, what's next?
After Biden?
Yeah. Does he actually restore the soul of America, return us to the Obama years? And
I mean, honestly, it'll probably be his vice president. Because I don't know if he's going to run for a second term.
You don't think Biden will run for a second term?
I mean, he'll be like 82? I'd be lucky if he survives that long.
We are obviously talking about imponderables. On the theoretical basis, I cannot see a world in which Joe Biden does not run for re-election if he wins the election.
In some way, I don't disagree, but 82.
He's old. He's an old man.
That's so old. I don't know.
I don't think...
We'll probably have a podcast before then to talk about it.
We probably will. We'll talk about it then.
Yeah. But 82. Like, that's like great-grandparent age. For us. And we're old.
My grandfather was older than 82 when he died. And that was a couple of years ago.
Hey, fine. Great grandparent for whatever. You know, math.
They're old people. These are really old people up on stage. Yeah. And when you have old people, you have a lot of imponderables, such as whether or not they're still sane and senile, whether or not they are capable of avoiding coronavirus, whether they're capable of actually governing the country, whether they're sunsetting. We don't know these things. They're really scary. It's reasonable to say maybe there should be an age limit on the other side. There's an age limit for the presidency of you have to be at least 35. Maybe you shouldn't be older than 75.
Or 65.
There's room for negotiation, I'm sure. That's what politics is all about. Negotiation, compromise.
No. Stick to your principles. That's the only way to go. All right, sounds like we're at an impasse here.
That's what happens when you stick to your principles.
RampantDiscourse.com.
Discord.io/RampantDiscourse.
Follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Rampant Disc.
Website, rampantdiscourse.com.
I just said that.
It's kind of the most important part. It's where I started.
Pay attention. Anything else?
We're good.
All right. Can't stop the discourse.